What I'm planning to talk about is not so much endangered languages as endangered literacies. And a number of the talks that we've had today and yesterday have been talking about textualization of practices. I'm actually going to talk about the almost the opposite, which is a challenge to oralization of literary forms. So I'll talk a little bit. This is about the talk is about the island of Lombok in Indonesia, a little bit about the location and history, something about the language, and then I'll introduce the main topic, which is a type of literary form, which is called in Sasak, called lontar, and some discussion about literary practices, and then some brief conclusions. So the island of Lombok is located right in the center of Indonesia here, next to the island of Bali. Its neighbors, as you can see from a space shuttle photograph, Lombok, Bali, Java, and the island of Sumbawa. So we have a chain of islands quite closely located. There is a deep trench that runs down between Lombok and Bali, and the so-called Wallace Line runs between the two of them. So from an ecological perspective, we have Asian ecology to the left and oceanic ecology to the right. There's, again, a space shuttle photograph of Lombok to give you an idea of what the island looks like, dominated by the second highest mountain in Indonesia, a still active volcano, and the vast bulk of the population lives in a narrow strip across the southern part of the volcano. There's a sort of a plain area there, which is inhabited by the population of roughly 3 million people. We're talking about a space of 65 kilometres by 65 kilometres, a third of which is uninhabitable, so they're crammed into a fairly tight space. Lombok has been dominated by outsiders for many centuries, starting with the Majapahit Javanese kingdom, and then in the 16th century, Islamicized from eastern Lombok, and in the 17th century, conquered by the Balinese, who remained there for 200 years. This is important because when we look at the linguistic aspects and the language practices, we'll see the influence of this history. In the 19th century, under the banner of helping those poor Sasaks, the Dutch invaded and subjugated the Balinese, destroying the Balinese kingdom in the process. And in the 20th century, the Sasaks have been colonized by the Japanese first, and since 48, the Indonesian Republic, which means basically, again, Javanese domination from the outside. The Sasak comprise about 90% of the population of Lombok, roughly 2.5 million people, and growing very rapidly. The Balinese remain as a large community of 300,000 living in the western part of Lombok, and Sasak is spoken by the majority of the population, that is, of the Sasaks, across the island in family and village domains. But we have a clear diglossic situation where it has no functions outside of those domains. That is, it's not used in education, it's not used in literacy, it's Bahasa Indonesia, the national language, which is the language of education, media, government, business, literacy, and high status. So Sasak has a low status diglossic L position. There is a growing rural-urban split and language shift rapidly taking place in urban areas where Sasaks, even in families where everybody speaks Sasak, children are growing up speaking Indonesian. And what's been happening increasingly is depopulation of rural villages. One of the villages where I have focused my work, when I went back on my last field trip, there were basically nobody between the age of about 10 and 50 were actually in the living, no males in that age group. They were all in Malaysia or in the Middle East sending money back. And the rural areas are being depopulated very rapidly. So the two languages that we are talking about are Sasak, spoken by a large proportion of the population, but with imminent language shift, and Balinese. Bahasa Indonesia is the high language and dominates education, the media, and so on. The fourth language that we need to bring into the picture is Kawi. This is a version of early modern Javanese, and it exists in Lombok as the literary language, the language of texts, the language of poetry. The language of the puppet theatre is in Kawi, so too music and drama. So if you go to a public performance, the language that the performances are carried out in will tend to be Kawi, not Bahasa Indonesia or Sasak. Sasak shows enormous regional and social variation, and there's a big distinction between what's called Bahasa Kasar, or plain, low language, and Bahasa Alus, which is high language. And the high language is very heavily influenced by Javanese and by Balinese. So just to give you an example, this is a dialect map made by a colleague at the University of Mataram. The verb to bite has all of these various forms spread across the area. I think there's 20-odd different verbal forms there, and the same is true for lots and lots of other areas. Politeness is encoded lexically through basic vocabulary, both for nouns and verbs, but even in pronouns, and the forms of auxiliary verbs vary according to levels of politeness. And there are three levels: biasa, ordinary conversation; maju, middle politeness; and alus is high politeness. So the word for I is mata, is the ordinary everyday word. Panantung, if I was speaking about my father's eye, I would say panantung. And speaking about my grandfather's eye or a highly respected person, I would say panyarminan. In addition, there are honorifics and humble forms. So if a high person gives to a low person, it's atur. And if a low person receives from a high person, it's ichan. So you have the honorific system and the levels system. And if that's not complicated enough, Kawi terms are used for hyper-politeness. So there's no low-level form for apology. The alus form is nurgur, but if you want to be very, very apologetic, you'll say ampure. Mate is to die, ningal is alus, and mangkut is the Kawi form. It would be almost like using Latin in a sort of English sense. So Kawi continues to have an active function within Sasak sociolinguistics as well as being the literary language. It's there around because people will hear it in this hyper-polite register. Traditionally, there are four social castes. The menaks, or the nobles, who constitute about 5% of the population, and then most people, 90% or so, are commoners. The dominant religious role is Islam. 98.98% of the population identify as being Islam, as being Muslims. And modern contemporary society in Indonesia is built on an ideology of education and attainment. But in the background, traditional views, what's called in Indonesian adat, remains a very strong influence. And that includes literary practices. To be Sasak is to be Muslim. Basic sort of ideological statement about the community. But there are two versions of Islam on Lombok. Waktu Limur, which is pretty orthodox Sunni Islam, and a local variant called Wutu Tulu, which is a sort of syncretism of ancestor worship and local spirits and a version of Islam. So Wutu Tulu pray three times a day, not five times a day. They eat pork. They do not go on the Hajj. And they pray to the spirits, local spirits. Waktu Limur has been proselytizing and dominating Sasak society, converting whole villages at an instant from Wutu Tulu to Waktu Limur. The significance of this for manuscripts and for orality and literacy will become clear in a few moments. Traditional literature, there is a traditional practice of inscribing texts on the dried leaves of the lontar palm, and this was apparently borrowed from the Balinese and the Javanese, and it's a tradition that goes back to southern India. The oldest texts currently in existence date from the 19th century, and many of them are in Dutch or other colonial collections, including in the British Museum. The Dutch have many hundreds of lontar that were collected from Lombok. The Mataram Museum has quite an extensive collection. It's in a metal shed at the back of the museum, and they're lying on the floor, rotting to pieces. But families, many families and individuals, also hold lontar, individual lontar. There is local activity to copy the texts onto more permanent forms for study, and starting in the 1970s, there was a lot of activity to copy the lontar onto paper and to reproduce them so that there were some copies, physical copies available. So that's what a lontar looks like. It's a sequence of palm leaves with a string down the middle, and I'm not sure if you can see the writing on there. It's inscribed with a steel nib and charcoal rubbed into it. The palm fronds are quite brittle and they have to be oiled on regular occasions. So when you do the process of reading, that's actually keeping the literacy, keeping the literary objects going. Putting them in a museum is actually the worst thing you can do because they'll just fall to pieces rather than be used. The lontar texts are written either in Kawi or in Sasak or in a mixture of the both of them. And interestingly, there are Kawi texts which were actually composed on Lombok, which don't come from Java, that do not exist on Java itself. So they were writing in the Kawi language in Lombok. There are 5 meters which are used in the texts, and they have a fixed metrical structure. So, for example, there's one called Dang Dang, 10 lines of 85 syllables, and the last syllable of each line has to end in E-R-E-U-E-R-U-R-E-R. And I'll show you an example of that in a moment. The texts are highly elliptical and poetic, and their interpretation must be taught. Several texts, like Tutur Monyeh, the story of the Monkey King, or Ranganis, are very popular and are performed, I say regularly, but actually we'll come back to the regularity in a moment. Others much, much less known. So here's a Dang Dang. This is from Ranganis. And you can see the rhyming scheme I've marked there with the underscore. You count the syllables, you'll find it's exactly the rhyme that I talked about. But look at what's the meaning. The king descended to house float, sit thinking, not like life, Princess Ranganis, vision in stomach. Right, so he's thinking about the princess, something appeared to him. You have to actually sit with somebody and they explain what the meanings of these things are. Previous research mainly treats the lontar as objects or artifacts removed from their cultural context of performance. So there is a Dutch translation of Tutur Monyeh, which was published in Holland, but it's a publication. It's like extracted the text and just translated it. Marison has a catalogue of all of the materials held in Indonesia and the West, and this is simply a listing of all of the lontars that exist. Van der Meij, in a recent publication, points out that Lombok, it's kind of from a cultural perspective, the Dutch and many other scholars basically stood in Java and said Java is the centre of the cultural universe of Indonesia. Bali is pretty good, there's lots of fantastic stuff there, but that's where it stops. And Lombok is kind of ignored. In fact, during the colonial period, the residency of Bali and Lombok was on Bali, and Lombok was kind of an afterthought. It was the place where you went to get some rice if you were feeling hungry and so on. So I found this actually quite astounding when I first started working on this language 10 years ago. A language with 2 million speakers that's been basically ignored, and a literary tradition incredibly rich with hundreds and hundreds of manuscripts that nobody has really paid attention to. Marison gives a list of 7 pages of the history of people who have actually looked at the literature. It's a few Dutch colonial scholars. The Western scholarly tradition has essentially ignored the literature of the Sussex. This is a place that's 20 minutes from a major international airport on Bali, with 2 million speakers readily available. There are palm trees and mangoes. It's a great place to go. Don't have to go to thousands of metres up at the top of Nepal. Van der Meij, to my surprise, is the first published description 10 years ago of actual performance, what people actually do with these things. Most of the descriptions prior to that are about what these objects look like and what the content is. And there's only 4 pages. And all of his references, they used to do this, they used to do that. And in his recent book, which is a translation of a Javanese epic, there's one chapter about how the texts are used and very brief descriptions of performances. But interestingly, he says, being myself employed elsewhere and not in academia, I was not in a position to study manuscript usage in Lombok, as extensive fieldwork was impossible. In other words, he, sitting in Holland, has translated this manuscript. He went to Lombok, he interviewed a few scholars, but he never actually saw anybody reading one of these things. There have been anthropologists who've been working in Lombok, both Dutch and non-Dutch, but as far as I know, nobody has actually recorded a performance of Lontar reading. So Van der Meij says, it used to be popular. Present-day Sussex remember readings of it. Texts were widely used during ceremonies. Nowadays, the Lontar are increasingly rare. So sort of a backwards-looking historic perspective. Now, my research on Lombok started out, as I said, 10 years ago. Primarily, my focus has been on the study of the morphosyntax of the language, the structure of the language, and I've been doing field work there, working also with consultants and colleagues in Australia, recording conversations, recording dialogues, and storytelling, and doing elicitation. A completely unplanned opportunity arose for me to document a performance of Lontar reading. One of my colleagues at the University of Mataram had talked to me about this, and he knew I was kind of interested. And on a field trip when I was there in 2002, I was there for a month doing field work, and one day he came to me and he said, there's a performance tomorrow, do you want to come? So I immediately said, well, sure, why not? And I was invited by that group to go to Penuja, and Sudirman, my colleague, and I worked together in Frankfurt the year after on looking at some of this. So I recorded several hours of video and audio of a performance. Most of it still remains to be worked on. It has not until now been my major focus. The on-site research, what it shows is that several previous claims about Sasak literacy and literary practices needs correction. Sir Van der Meij, in his earlier account, says paper has never been used for Lontars. Well, sorry, there's paper. There's a text. You can see, those of you can read a little bit of that. You can see that the script is a Indic-based script. It's Hanarachaka, so on, an Indian type of script. And so it is used, and paper is widely used, and as we'll see in a few seconds, in performance, the paper versions are what people are using. So how do people learn to read this? Well, the texts are studied privately in small study groups, and they're studied by copying the form several times over. Sudirman gave me a copy of a student's book where one of his students had just copied the thing out dozens and dozens of times. So you learn to do the intonation of the melody. So if it's a dung-dung, you have to learn what the dung-dung melody is with somebody who can actually read the text, that is, perform it. And only then do they explain to you what the text is about. In a performance, the texts are read in Papaosan, which is in a specially constructed location. The one that I went to had over 100 people involved. It was a public performance.
There are two or three main readers accompanied by an audience who repeat and complete the verses at the end of each line of the text. One reader, called Pamaus, sings the Kawi text, Kawi and or Sasak text, and then a second reader gives the interpretation of that in modern contemporary Sasak. So you'll get a Kawi pronunciation, and then the second reader will say, and then the king saw the scarf of the princess lying in the palm tree. And then we go on to the next verse. So it's always dualistic. There are always at least two, and at the end of each verse, the audience joins in to intone the melody. So here's a Sasak group, guys sitting around. The performance is taking place in the middle of this constructed area. And if I can, I'll see if we can get the video up and let you see what... this was a very rough video. Basically, I hadn't expected this to happen, and I had just the opportunity to go and see it, and we did a little bit of filming. So what you just heard the old man in the middle say, that was the Kawi text, Din Ning Ma De, and so on. The audience joins in at the end of the line, and then the second reader on the right explains what that is in Sasak. And this sort of ceremonial setup here, the performance started at 9 p.m. and finished at 3 in the morning. They read a series of lontars during this time. As far as I know, this is the first and only the first video that's ever been recorded of Sasak performance. And this is one of only three places in Indonesia where lontars are still read. Lombok, Bali, and the Riau Islands in down near Singapore. Anybody recognize this, what that is?
Indian flower pot?
No. This guy here. It's betel nut, and that's how you keep going all night. Okay, so this was a performance. You can see the old man there reading from the paper books, which they're not supposed to be using, according to Fundamay, and the audience surrounding him. The audience came and went at various times. People got up and left, and others came in. It was like somebody described earlier. People fell asleep, and you know, some people wandered off, etc. So the performers continue. The number of people who can perform Ma Che is quite restricted, and perhaps maybe no more than about 100 performers. Others are clearly involved in the process, but they can't actually recite the lines. They know when to come in at the end and add on the extra little bits, but they can't actually perform the readings. There are some attempts by some local scholars, including my colleague Sudirman, to promote local interest. Now, the regional government in Lombok promotes local culture. It's a very modernistic, development-oriented, let's move ahead, dig up the diamond mines, and so on. But there's once a year in August, there's a festival where adat is celebrated. Adat has become a commodity. It's become a commodification process. So there are performances which are held during this period of time, but they're only the canonical texts, and they're held at convenient times when people can, you know, come and sit and watch this for a short period of time. Any text that isn't passed on, particularly the non-canonical texts, are disappearing because without a reader to teach the next generation, you can't read the text. Even if you can read the characters, you can't actually intone it or sing it in the correct fashion. So Sasak itself as a language isn't in any way endangered, but it's highly possible that this literature and its practice may or is becoming endangered. The manuscripts exist, but there's nobody to read them. There's nobody to perform them. So the oralization of this literary form is incredibly threatened. Not only that, the manuscripts are becoming more threatened as well. The Waktulima are trying to root out what they take to be old-time religion. And that means burning manuscripts, if possible. And there's an enormous pressure on Wututulu families to hand over their materials and for them to be destroyed. So the physical material is disappearing, but even more crucially, the ability to perform language here is incredibly threatened. So the time is really ripe for a proper ethnographically informed study of literary practices. After years and years, unbelievably, of neglect, before the literature and the skill to perform it disappears entirely. There's some references, and thank you for your attention.